Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Welcome to episode one of the audio blog. This is Engineering Meets Economics, and today we're going to talk about something that gets framed as kind of a binary option a little too often, and that's centralization versus decentralization. Now, this episode isn't about picking a side and arguing for an either-or. It's about recognizing that the best systems, especially identity systems, don't live at either extreme. They move around. So this episode is based on the blog post, Engineering Meets Economics, Shifting, Not Choosing Between Centralized and Decentralized, which you can find on SphericalCowConsulting.com. Now, we're going to be focusing on digital identity, but the ideas here apply to infrastructure more broadly, because whether you're designing a login flow, a wallet ecosystem, a cloud strategy, kind of doesn't matter. The resilience comes in from the ability to shift around and not just scale and get bigger. So let's dive in. First, let's start with a bit of a clarification, because centralized and decentralized can mean so many different things depending on what layer you're talking about. In an identity system, centralization usually refers to who controls the source of truth and the rules of engagement. A centralized identity system might use a single corporate directory as the source of truth, where identities are managed, access policies are enforced, and decisions flow from one authority. Even if you're using a third-party provider like Okta or Microsoft Entra, the control is still centralized if it all stems from that single directory and policy framework. Now, that's different from decentralized identity systems where the control is distributed. The user or device might hold their own credentials and verification happens independently of any single governing authority. Trust is negotiated. It's not inherited from a single source. Now, to be clear, decentralized doesn't mean there's no structure. It just means that the structure allows multiple parties to operate with some level of autonomy. Now, in practice, most organizations sit somewhere in between. You might authenticate users through a central identity provider or IDP, while also issuing credentials that work across external partners, vendors, or federations. And that hybrid space is where things get interesting and where smart architecture can give you room to maneuver as your environment changes. Okay, did that make sense? No? Let me try an analogy. When I was a kid, my father decided it would be hilarious to toss me a stack of plates. These were those old Corningware white and blue plates, and if you're of a certain age and in the U.S., I know you probably remember these. Now, me being me, I'm not about to attempt to catch a pile of plates, and so I jump back and the plates crash to the ground. And I promise this is going somewhere relevant. Those plates didn't just break, they shattered and continued to shatter for a good 5 minutes. You could hear the little crackles as things turned into small slivers of Corningware. A purely centralized technology is like a whole plate. A purely decentralized technology is a lot like slivers of plate. The best model is to have a plate that can survive being broken and yet still remain useful in one configuration, and that it won't become an unmanageable pile of slivers. So it can be broken. Those broken pieces are still useful, but it doesn't break down into just unrecognizable shattered bits. Okay, I digress, I suppose. So why does this matter? Because in an enterprise system, especially identity, you're always making decisions about control, whether you call it that or not. Now, let's say your organization uses a central IDP like Okta or Entra. You manage the directory or directory-like object. You define the policies, but now you want to federate across to a partner organization or issue credentials that could be verified independently or meet new data residency rules in different jurisdictions. You're not decentralizing for the fun of it. You're decentralizing because your environment changed. And that's where the friction begins. If your architecture assumes that everything will always route through one system, one policy engine, one source of truth, you're going to have a problem. Now, you might be thinking, why do I need to build systems that can shift between models? Isn't that just over-engineering for edge cases? You know, it's a fair question, but here's the thing. No one ever thinks they need that optionality until their primary model fails. The thing is they don't have to be fast, you know. The shift doesn't have to be complete, but it does have to be possible. Because if the only direction your system can actually move is like in this one pattern, it's not resilient, it's actually brittle. Which gets me to that heart of the problem. You're not choosing decentralization or centralization for its own sake. What you need to be doing is designing for the ability to shift control when the situation demands it, whether that's technical, legal, or organizational. Now, I'm not trying to tell a fear story here. I'm giving you a design challenge. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt may be what you're hearing, but for me, it's this challenging moment that's a new take on the reality that I think we can do better with. So let's talk about why most systems don't feel flexible and why decentralization may sound good in theory, but so often gets pushed aside in practice, especially in the enterprise. Well, I think the short answer is because centralization is easier to explain, it's easier to build, and it's easier to control, at least at first. When you're under pressure to ship a service, secure a system, or meet compliance requirements, centralization feels like such an obvious choice because it's simplifying your procurement. It's probably shortening your decision making, and it's giving you that one throat to choke when something goes wrong. It's not a failure. It's just what happens when you don't have time to design for flexibility. Now, it's kind of funny that, you know, when you're thinking about it that way, because most organizations already decentralized, at least to some extent, they just don't necessarily call it that. So if you're, you know, in a big company, you might let different business units manage their own IAM policies. You might federate identity across subsidiaries or acquired companies. You might let contractors use their own credentials, tying them into your systems through some kind of federation like SAML or OpenID Connect. And that's decentralization. Usually works reasonably well, though if it's not done mindfully, it can be a little bit fragile, a little bit informal. And when that informal stuff breaks, then you're kind of scrambling and you want to rebuild that central source of control because control feels good. Or worse, you might start doubling down on centralization in ways that creates serious lock-in. Because once you've optimized for a single identity provider or a single trust model or a single cloud region, you've made a bet as to what's going to persevere in the long term. If your business changes or the legal environment shifts or the vendor gets acquired, you're kind of stuck. And that's not a failure of centralization, it's a failure of being flexible. So what I want to talk about isn't abandoning control, it's designing a system that can be reconfigured without having to start all over again. And I don't think that's a fantasy, I think it's a different set of design goals. So what does flexibility actually look like in real-world identity systems? Well, okay, it's not about throwing out everything centralized, and it's definitely not about decentralizing just for the sake of doing it. It's about designing with options, right? You want to build a system that supports more than one model of control, more than one model of trust, and more than one path forward. For example, your internal directory can still be the system of record, but you can design APIs or token flows that let external verifiers validate credentials independently. You can use federated logins across business partners, but layer on policy controls that live with the relying party, not the issuer. You can store data in the cloud, but architect for a multi-region failover or multi-cloud redundancy, so your compliance strategy isn't tied to one jurisdiction. Again, the goal isn't to decentralize everything. It's to avoid systems where the only way to function is through one tightly coupled dependency. That kind of flexibility isn't free. It does cost more to architect, and it takes more time for teams to align, and you'll probably have to explain it repeatedly to leadership who wants to know why you're not using the default centralized option. What you're building in and the argument you can make is that you're building room to maneuver. So when things shift, like when a vendor changes their roadmap or a regulation forces your hand, you're not stuck rewriting your entire stack. You're shifting your control intentionally. So here's the takeaway from all of this. Decentralization isn't inherently better. Centralization isn't inherently bad. What matters is whether your system is designed to adapt, not just to today's need, but to tomorrow's constraints. Now, that might mean building systems that can federate when needed, but still operate independently. Could mean designing identity flows that let you change providers without rewriting your policy framework. It could mean making architecture decisions that give you breathing room, not just efficiency. Because, you know, your real resilience isn't going to be about eliminating all risk. You can't. But it is about having the room to shift across vendors, across trust models, across jurisdictions without throwing everything out. Think of optionality as a feature, and flexibility is what is keeping your designs relevant when the world changes around it. So what now? The written post, Engineering Meets Economics, does dive a bit deeper into all of this if you want an idea of more about what I'm talking about, and also, since this is the first of a series of four posts, where the series is heading. If you're building identity systems, managing user access, or just trying to future-proof your architecture, remember, this isn't about choosing a side, you know, for the people who are passionate about decentralization or centralization. It's about building the flexibility to respond to change. So, thank you for listening. You can find the written post and the rest of the series at Spherical Cow Consulting over the next few weeks, and I'd love to hear what you think. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.